I do remark that I know a bit about again that I don't know anything about. So.
And the Village are the All-Ireland champions, 19 points to 14. Who said they couldn't win it?
You're welcome along to this week's episode of the James Stephens Podcast. Coming up, we'll look back on James Stephens' victory over Greig Ballycallan in the under-21A quarter-final. We'll catch up with John Scott to preview a special event in the James Stephens Clubhouse next December. And later in the programme, we'll continue our James Stephens Legend series as we talk to more club heroes. But first, we begin in Tom Ryle Park in Kilmana last Sunday with the four goals James Stephens scored against Greig Ballycallan, plus reaction from manager Paddy Butler.
And what a difference 60 seconds makes. Pat James Stephens with 1-1 without reply to extend their lead to 1-3 to 3 points, all coming from Ed McDermott, the first, an absolute rasper into the back of the net. And not content with that, from the next phase of the play, he went down and popped it over the bar.
The first one he stopped from going wide, and he managed to get it on the ground, down on the ball, and turn left and put it into the net. A very, very good goal.
Noah Minogue this time. Noah finds Stephen, power kill it, and Stephen clears the ball for James Stephens. Back down towards the Greig Ballycallan 20 metre line, and it's that man, Mr. Deadly, Ed McDermott. Ed McDermott with the high ball in towards Stephen Minogue. Stephen breaks it down on the hurl, takes a shot, and Stephen Minogue puts that ball in the back of the net. That's what you call full forward play. Ed McDermott to Stephen Minogue. He did well to control it, and the rest was a formality as he stuck it in the bottom corner of the net. James Stephens turn it over now, and they're back in the Greig Ballycallan half. Here they go. Chance here for James Stephens, and that ball is fired into the back of the net. Ben Cantwell doing the necessary. Again, Ed McDermott at the heart of the attack, and he found his fellow Village man Ben Cantwell, and Bell hit an absolute rasper into the top of the net, and James Stephens extend their lead to 3-9 to 10 points. There's a shot is taken there by Ed McDermott from distance. It drops on the crossbar, but as Owen Egan tried to control it on his own goal line, Stephen Minogue swooped in. Ed McDermott with the initial strike, and that's what every good forward should do, be alert, and that's exactly what Stephen was, Nicky.
The ball was right on the crossbar. Owen Egan tried to tap it down. He did tap it down, but I'm afraid Stephen Minogue was very sharp to the ball and banged it into the back of the net.
JJ Cavett and Sons, Kilkenny Under-21A Hurling Championship. James Stephens 4-11, Greig Ballycallan 1-14. While James Stephens scored a decisive win over Greig Ballycallan in Tom Ryle Park, Kilmana this afternoon. Now perhaps the margin at the finish flattered them slightly, but there was no doubting their superiority, certainly for the last three quarters of this particular game. Goals were key in the 14th minute. Ed McDermott, who started a little quietly, he bagged a great goal after he stopped the ball from going over the sideline. Followed that with a point 1 minute later. Stephen Minogue, following an Ed McDermott cross, he controlled the ball brilliantly on 30 minutes to bag their second goal. That gave them a 2-6 to 7-point lead at half-time. Greig Ballycallan, with points from Jack Butler and Aaron McAvoy, opened the scoring. And Jeff Neary in the middle of the field played very well in the first half, landing points in the 18th and 21st minute. But those goals were pushing the Village men further ahead, heading up towards the half-time break. The home side made a good start to the second half with early points from Aaron McAvoy of free and Oisín Egan. But Stephen Minogue, who was unerring from frees all afternoon, he replied. He got two more a couple of moments later in between Ryan Corcoran scoring from the home side. On 15 minutes, a third James Stephens goal arrived, courtesy of Ben Cantwell, who availed of another pass from Ed McDermott to score and put his side 3-9 to 10 points into the lead. It was very much James Stephens at that stage, and to make matters worse for the home side, an error by goalie Owen Egan, who stopped the ball going over the bar, it broke down, the unrushing Stephen Minogue put it into the back of the net, 4-9 to 13 points. Greig Ballycallan did make a great burst in the closing stages and managed to get a late goal from Ben Young in injury time, but it was too little too late as James Stephens ran out deserving winners 4-11 to 1-14 in Tom Ryle Park this afternoon, and they go through to the Ryan A Under-21 semi-finals, which will take place in a couple of weeks' time. Final score again, James Stephens 4-11, Greig Ballycallan 1-14.
Here are the post-match thoughts of Paddy Butler.
We came out here, we knew how hard Ballycannon were training our last couple of weeks when they went out a senior. But all fairness to our lads, to show the fight, we matched them in their work rate. and we took our scores when we did.
Forwards proving their weight in goal today. Goals just at the right times.
Absolutely, and that's what it's all about. As I say, it's winter hurling. Just be direct, hit it in, get the ball as fast into the forwards, as we say to our lads. In all fairness, it's been the players were in the right place at the right time and banged it in the net. Not fair play to them. But all fairness, Ballycallan gave us serious account of themselves. A fair play to them.
And you march on now to a semi-final. This grade, very, very competitive. So no matter who you get, it'll be tough.
Yeah, exactly. And as I said, it's winter hurling, so anything can happen, as I say. We have after picking up a few injuries. So look, we have 2 weeks, I think, maybe two, whoever, is it Mooncoin or Thomastown on the other side. But look, we've 2 weeks to get ready and we'll give it a go again.
And last word then, it is winter hurling. We're in the middle of November now. It keeps the season alive after a hard slog during the summer months.
It does, and it keeps the young lads hurling through the winter and all that. But as I say, a few of our lads are hurling with the schools and colleges and all that. So again, it's all about trying to mind them as well and getting them right for the match day.
On Saturday, the 22nd of October, 2022, James Stevens GA Club held a reunion in their clubhouse in Larchfield to commemorate the 40th anniversary of the club winning the 1982 All-Ireland Senior Club Hurling title. In that 1982 final, James Stevens defeated Mount Sion from Waterford 3-13-3-8. This was the second All-Ireland Senior Club title for James Stevens, with the club also winning the 1976 final against Blackrock from Cork on a score of 2-10-2-4. The Kilkenny City side won a third All-Ireland Club title in 2005, defeating Athenry from Galway 19-14. Well, fan, we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the 82 victory. Where has all the years gone?
I don't know, Nicky. When I look in the mirror, they're gone a long time.
Because you were no spring chicken when you played in that final.
41. I was 41.
So let's make easy work out now what age you are today after all that, if they can do their maths.
Now you have it.
What can you remember about that? Because I suppose having got over Johnstown and gone into a club championship, you were very keen to make it a second title. Because you had already one in your bag, but you wanted another one.
Yeah, we wanted another one. We were very lucky to beat the Westfield champion, the Terriers. I think we only beat him by a point or two. And only Denny McCormick scored 4 points from the middle of the field. We'd have been better. And Condowda hit a ball about 3 minutes to go, and it crossed the whole square, and it just went out by the post. That Liam Tibble said Mick Moore had a cover. It was in the net of it at the...
Yeah, but your teams that win championships, they can always point to a bit of stroke of luck, and that was your luck. You got over the first two matches handy enough between Brownstown and a Jimmy Doyle-trained Portlaoise.
Yeah,
but obviously, you knew the Wexford lads very well at that stage. I mean, there was the reports had yourself as Willie Murphy was playing brilliant games defensively that day, but they had a lot of other players like Ned Boogie, among other things.
The Wexford had a very good team there. Ned Boogie was a great hurler, you know, a free taker. He used to play left half-back, but he hurted his knee and he came up then onto the forward line. He was a great striker on the ball. Not a handballer at present. If I'm not mistaken, I think he's still playing. Yeah.
He sure is still playing, and he has a son as well, who's not too bad also, I think, Gavin Boogie. But again, I suppose, going in against Gort here, unusual to get a semi-final in Nolan Park, and Galway teams were always strong. They might have been a little bit overawed, though, coming up against yourselves, because Galway teams hadn't quite made the breakthrough at that stage.
Well, I don't know whether they were overawed, but they led us for a good bit of the game. And I'd say it's only for Andy Egan we'd have been beat. Maloney refereed it, John Maloney, Lord of Mercy. And Andy was playing on Sylvie. And sure, you know Sylvie, the way he hurdles. Maloney blew him 4 or 5 times. And Billy walked up and hit him over the bar. And... As the lad said, the rest is history.
Yeah. Going on to the All-Ireland against Mount Sion, I mean, they were a star sort of team. Jim Green, who was the leading championship scorer that year. They had Pat McGrath, who'd be Ken's father, and they had many other players, and even an ex-village man in their ranks that day. So for a long time, they had the better of you, and they looked comfortable enough at 6 and 7 points. How did you feel at that stage?
Well, sure, we felt as it was going away from us. Going away from us, and at least we... kept hurling on, so we did. Denny McCormick and Tom played terrible game in the middle of the field. You know, they did, and Joey Boy as well. And John McCormick was the star. He scored 3 goals. And That's what it's all about.
But in All-Ireland finals, doesn't it often take one player just to have the game at the Rye of the Rovers game? And that's what John McCormack had that day.
That's what he had. But John McCormack was a very good hurler. He used to, when he started with us, came in from Callan, he started with us. He used to play left half forward. And there weren't a day I went out I didn't score 2 or 3 points. And he broke his leg kicking football with the village. And it set him back. He lost a yard of pace. And they put him into the corner. Good job, because he was lethal inside, you know.
Now, I was talking to Mick O'Flynn earlier, and bringing on Mick, who was an athletics player, long jump and triple jump, and was international class at that stage. When he came on board with the physical training, now I know you were involved with Kilkenny at that stage as well, but how did you take to his training and to the working out in the gym below in the CBS? Or did you get much opportunity to do that, given that you were with Kilkenny?
Oh, I did, yeah, I done that, yeah. Well, Kilkenny weren't training like they are now. As you know yourself from your own career, when it started, there was none of that winter training or anything like that. That when Mickey Flynn started, it was all new. And it used to be a bit of a laugh in the beginning, but then it got serious, you know.
And obviously, moving on to today, I mean, that's gone to a completely different level now, where if you don't do your physical stuff on your own away from the rest of the people, you're going to be left behind. But I suppose you were quite ahead of your time when you started that in the early 80s.
And I'd say we were up there with a lot of the Kerry team. The Kerry team used to do that. And we were well up there with that, you know. And a lot of the younger men, the younger lads on the team, they cherished it. They used to love it because, you know, being young, you do anything, you know.
Winning that All-Ireland, I suppose, I mean, the first one is always the sweetest, but it certainly was stamping James Stephens as one of the real strong clubs in the country at that stage. I mean, you were to go on and win more, of course, subsequent years, but it must have been a great boost to the club, and the excitement must have been fantastic.
Oh, sure, the excitement was terrific, you know, because we didn't, going up, we weren't favourites to win it, you know. And as you said, Mount Sinai were a star-studded team after coming out of Munster, you know. They had Jim Green, and they had Spooley, and they had Ken McGrath. You know, they had a good team now.
Tell me, how did you feel like when you were playing against your former clubman, Terry Butler? I mean, did you have a few words with him on the day, or did you try to use your little bit of psychology on him during the game?
No, I wasn't playing on Terry. Terry,
but I know you weren't, but you were probably able to have a few words with him and remind him at times of where his obligations lie.
That's what I used to shout at him, all right. Spooley, we used to call him, you know. But he was good sport after, you know. Disappointed he didn't win, but sure, that's hurling.
Absolutely. But it's great that so many players, God rest Andy Egan and Billy Walton and the representatives are here tonight, it's great that so many players are still around and able to recall these sort of memories, because I have no doubt that success, I'm sure it inspired many others in the club to go on and represent this club with a lot of pride and a lot of success.
Well, it does, yeah. But like every club that wins it, Muckalee won it and Shamrocks win it nearly every second year. And it drives them on. You know, it drives them on. Because the lads coming up, not alone do they want to win the championship, they want to win the club All-Ireland. And that's what it's all about.
Does it put pressure on younger lads coming up here, the fact that you and a lot of the lads have won in more than one and more All-Irelands at club level? Does it put enormous pressure on in that club, that with a club with that sort of history?
I don't think so. I think it brings them on. That they look up to the lads that's after doing it. Sure, all you have to do is look at the Shamrocks. I mean, they bring a new lad in every second year, and the young lad is a star, you know. It brings them up. It brings them up that level, you know.
Was there any particular highlight for you during that championship now, and we'll finish it at this, during that 81-82 championship, was there any particular thing stood out, or was it simply walking up the steps of Semple Stadium and getting the cup, which Jimmy O'Brien, of course, collected?
Well, I suppose the Leinster final... when we came from behind to win it, that was, as the lad said, I played well enough that day, you know.
Well, the paper said yourself and Willie Murphy were the stars, but look, it was a fair achievement. I mean, you were, as Fred said, no spring chicken, which you're not one bit ashamed to say, but maybe at the end of the day, that type of experience was what a team like James Stephens needed on such an occasion.
Oh, probably was, but I played in two county finals after with no luck. you know, so that's hurling.
Fan, a pleasure to talk to you. Great occasion, and well done, James Stevens, on a great night here. Well, I'm delighted to be talking to two stalwarts of that famous victory by James Stevens in the 82 final against Mount Sinai of Waterford. And Joe Hennessy, we'll start with you, and then we'll have Jimmy O'Brien, the team captain. Joe, what can you recall from that particular year itself?
Of course, we always felt, Nicky, at the start of every year, if we could get out of Kilkenny, we'd have a chance. For some reason or other, playing tournaments, as you know, back in the 70s and all that, or before that, there was always tournaments, you'd be playing matches all over the country. And we always seemed to play very well against teams from Cork, Wexford, Tipperary and all that. So the problem we always had, or any team in Kilkenny, if you're not from the Shamrocks, of course, is to try and win the county final in Kilkenny. And when we got out, the first time we beat Blackrock, we were mad for another one. And when we beat Johnstown in 81, we felt we had a chance. And, of course, you win a couple of games, then we found ourselves in the final against Mount Sinai, a right good team, and it happened on the day and we won the match and played well. You have to play well to win a final, but it was a great occasion, Nicky. It was absolutely fantastic.
And Jimmy, the first two matches were okay. You beat Brownstown 115-17, then Portlaoise 215-9, but by all accounts the Leinster final against Fair Harriers was a game that could very well have gone the other way. What can you remember about that?
Yeah, it was a game we won by a point. I do know that Fair Harriers came very, very close to scoring a goal almost
at the finish there.
At the finish, and there'd have been no time to recover from that. So that was sort of heart in the mouth stuff. We were defending like lions. But, you know, you had a full back line of Paddy Nari, Brian Cody and Fan Larkin. So you had to earn your score if you're going to get in there. It was a tough game all the way through. It was a low-scoring game. But we came out on the right side by a point.
Yeah, reading the reports of the match, they highlighted the performances of Fan and Willie Murphy at the other end. Those who remember Willie Murphy, he was a no-nonsense corner back as well. But in relation to the semi-final, actually, Joe, was played in Nolan Park, strange enough, between yourselves and Gort. That was a bit of unusual that you had a home venue.
It was unusual. I remember that game while Sylvie Linnell was playing there, Andy Egan, God rest him, I think they were hurling on one another. And I tell you, there was a few hurls broke that day now. But Gort lads came down and it was a great occasion here in town. But it was very unusual to have a home venue. But it was great, we weren't going to refuse that.
Jimmy, on then to Thurles to play Mount Sinai in the final, and it wasn't going all your own way for a long period.
It wasn't. I think there was a period when we were 6 or 7 points down and struggling. We managed to put it back with John McCormack scored a couple of goals, 3 goals in total. To put us 5 points ahead in the end, you know, but it wasn't, we didn't have it all our own way at all. It was a tough game. Like Mount Sinai came all guns blazing. They were well prepared for this and they were looking for their first title as well.
Yeah, and we know from talking to the two McCormacks that a village man, Terry Butler, was actually playing for Mount Sinai.
That's right, Nicky, and I tell you, at the country end in Thurles, Terry got a ball about 10 minutes to go in the game and he scored a point. It was about, I can still see it going over the bar. If it was 10 or 11 inches over the bar, I had to go under it. Jimmy said, we were in trouble. But yes, we stuck with it. Now, they were a very good team. Mount Sinai were an excellent team. That's strength and skill. But John McCormack took a couple of goals. And Jimmy was right about the 5-point win. It was closer than that. But sure, look, we got there in the end. And it was a famous win. And we got another one later on. But we're still looking for another one.
Yeah, well, absolutely, the hunger can never go. Jimmy, going up to get the cup that day, tell me what your feelings were at the time. What can you recall now?
You know, there's a lot of it I don't recall about that game at all because it seemed to pass by in a flash. But I remember collecting the cup. I was as proud as Punch, obviously. I was honoured to be a captain of the James Stevens team because we had a great team at that time. I mean, if you look at the team we had, this man sitting in front of you, Joe Hennessy, you had Brian Cody, you had Fan Larkin, you had Mick Crotty, all stars. You had lads who hurled minor with Kilkenny, underage with Kilkenny, you know. So I was very, very proud to be part of that team and I was very, very proud to be going up and collecting that cup on behalf of that team.
Yeah, James Stevens actually used 19 players in the 5 matches in that season. So there was a very tight-knit group. There wasn't too many, I think, who actually didn't play. I think there was another 5, actually, or 6, who actually didn't get to play a game in the actual All-Ireland Championship campaign.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, really, when you look back on it, it was a long campaign. If you go right back to when we started the local championship here at Kilkenny, it was in April 81, and we were still hurling in May 82. when we won the club final, because the club final didn't have a fixed date or it didn't have a fixed venue at that stage, so it was gone out to May. And in fact, we had played the first round of the 82 Championship before, 2 weeks before we played the All-Ireland Club Final. I think we played a draw with the Roars.
You did, and in actual fact, you were fortunate that that game was there because it was an opportunity for Tom McCormick to try out the cartilage that he was recovering from.
Absolutely. It's very unusual, as Jimmy said, to play a league match or a championship match here in Kilkenny 2 weeks before an All-Ireland final. It was unbelievable. But as Jimmy was saying, every game we played, lads were cementing the place. You were saying there weren't that many lads used as we moved into the club championship, but lads were getting a place now and they were starting to say, if I play well here, I'll be on the next day, if you had to win, of course. But the opportunities were there, and look, we had a right good team, as Jimmy said. You had to be good to beat the Johnstown. Johnstown were a great team in the 70s, and they were fading a little bit, gone into the 80s and that. But they were a wonderful club that should have won a club All-Ireland, one at least, anyway.
Well, lads, look, great to talk to you. Enjoyed the night, and two stalwarts of that great All-Ireland victory, Joe Hennessy and team captain Jimmy O'Brien.
Thank you.
Well, I'm delighted to be talking now to John McCormick. Well, John McCormick will always be synonymous with the win of 82 over Mount Sion because of the final, but we'll get to the final in a moment. What can you tell me about the earlier matches, John? You were generally in control against Brownstown and Westmeath and against Portlaoise, and of course you had beaten the Fenians in the final, so you were coming in probably fairly confident enough that this could be a good year.
We were, Nicky, yeah. It was... The win in the county final, sort of a tough rattle against Johnstown, of course, as usual. Pat Henderson and the lads, you know, they're never soft. But Mick Crotty, I remember that day, he got the two goals, which sort of we pulled away in the end. Like, we won by two goals, I think it was, in the end, yeah. I got a late point myself as well of Pat Henderson, and got a little sneak, of course, again, after getting the point, you know. Pat wasn't soft, but a good, honest to goodness hurler, great Kilkenny hurler, of course. But that was it then. We started off then at Brownstown, and it was touch and go then. The weather got a bit slobby and that, and we went, we played.
Yeah, you played Portlaoise after that, and you won that comfortably enough. Jimmy Doyle was training Portlaoise, but you got a close one against Faith Harriers, and talking to some of the lads here now, they can still see the ball just passing across in front of the goal that almost went in on Mick Moore, and had Faith Harriers got it, well, we wouldn't be all here tonight.
No, that's true. Yeah, Fed Harriers were a tough, dogged team that time as well, you know, as most Wexford's team were at the time, Buffersally and Rathnewer and all of them. They were all very, very good teams at the time. They were the kingpins in Wexford. Fed Harriers had won and had come through and were a new team. We were sluggish enough, and as I said, we were rather lucky, I suppose, on the day.
John, the semi-final then, you played Gort here in Nolan Park and won that game by 5 points. But going on to the All-Ireland final, I mean, you were in big bother for a long period until you certainly hit a purple patch. Tell us about that. What can you remember about those three goals?
Yeah. Well, I remember the ball came in, and I was sort of just barely outside the square, and I flicked the ball, and the ball, wherever way I flicked the ball, it just turned and twisted and ended up in the net. It was just one of those things. The next ball came in, and I just grabbed it and pulled, and on the left, I think, the left hand, and stuck in the net. Next ball came in, a few minutes afterwards, same thing again, grabbed it again and stuck it in the net. So we were about 7 points down, I think, at one stage. Mount Sion were playing very well. Pat McGrath and those were hurling over their skin at the time, you know. We pulled it back then, and we got really on top then, and Chunky, of course, and Billy Walton was our star. The late, great Billy Walton was our star that he hit great points. I think he scored 10 points. Yeah. On the day, like, and hit great points from play and from freeze. We were very accurate from freeze, and we all got into it then again, and we sort of, I think we won it by 5 points in the end.
It was unusual, and I know we alluded to this in talking to some of the other lads, it was a 5 point win in the end, that you actually faced Terry Butler in the opposite camp, and he had been playing with you the previous year. What was that like, to have one so close to yourselves here, playing now in the opposition?
Yeah, but sure, Terry had gone, and he had, you know, he was a guard down in Waterford, and he had joined Mount Sion. You know, for, I suppose, a lot of people do it now, and they've been doing it now. There's a lot of controversy with the chap of the Welshes there from Galway at the present time, you know, having joined the Dublin team. But you do it for your own sake. You do it for the travel element of it and all this and that. I know Waterford was only on the road now, but, like, it was a good 3/4 of an hour, and then trying to get out of Waterford, like, you know, in the evening, trying to get over the bridge and so on and so forth. But Terry decided he'd try his luck down there, and was hurling very, very well, and he was he was sharp enough on the day too.
And of course you would have great memories of playing with guys who were household names and became even greater household names after that. So that's part of the memories from that occasion, John, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah. But you have to look at it. When I looked at the list out there now and the team, you see Andy Egan, God rest him, Billy Walton, gone, you know, very, very young age. Like, it's just sad. Like, you and me can look at our age bracket and say, like, we're still here and, you know, we have great memories of all those games, right?
Recall the end of the match and the celebration and how you felt yourself, because having scored 3 goals in the final, you were the headline player. No matter all the stars were on the team, the guy who got the 3 goals was always going to be the star of the day.
Ah, yeah, Mick Moore said it, like the 3-goal hero and all this sort of thing. But you look at, I was part of a panel, like, as you know yourself, and it happened for me on the day, you know, and you could go out another day and it wouldn't happen for you, you know. But sure, there was great horrors. The two McCormicks were flying in the middle of the field, and you know, you sort of Joe Hennessy, of course, class, you know, fan. Sure, Christ, you know, Mick Moore and the goal, like, you know, they're great players, like great players. You can't just overlook them, and you can't underestimate them. They were absolutely class players, and that's it, you know.
Well, John, lovely to chat to you on this very special occasion. 40 years on, continue to have good health and enjoy at the matches. You're still doing the bit of all refereeing. Keep it up as long as you have the health to do it. Keep at it.
I will, of course, Nicky. Yeah. I'll tell you one thing. I can't understand where those 40 years are gone. It's just like, you know, just like yesterday. But sure, look at it. We'll plough on.
I'm here in James Stevens GAA Club with Mick Moore, Liam Tyrrell and Chairman Paddy Nari. Mick, firstly, we're reflecting tonight on the 1982 All-Ireland campaign. What are your memories of it?
Oh my God, I mean, you're talking about 40 years ago now at this stage. So much has happened in the interim. But, I mean, it was a fantastic occasion from the beginning of the campaign. I think we actually lost the first game. Is that right, lads? We actually lost the
Yeah, we were beaten in the first round by Freshford, as Paddy said, out in Ballyragget. And we only drew the second game against Smokalee, or against St. Martin's. And from then on in, we got it together, you know.
Yeah. And I would look at it, I mean, we had a very strong, powerful team. Many of the team actually, you know, made up nearly half of the Kilkenny team of that generation, which was also another outstanding team. And, you know, as Liam just said there, we built from a slow start and kept going. And I think we had a 20, over a two-year period, we had a 16 or a 22-year unbeaten, or a 22-match unbeaten run.
Well, that was 75-76, mate. Yeah, 81-82. Well, we got to two county finals, all right. We got to the 81, 82 and 83 senior county finals. But we won the 81 one, as we say, but we were beaten in 82 by the Shamrocks and beaten in 83 by the Shamrocks. But don't forget, that Shamrocks team had won 3 in a row, 78, 79 and 80, and the club All-Ireland in 81. So, like now, something similar to now, they were a super team at that stage. These are these lads' fathers, though, the present day, or their fathers and uncles.
And Liam Tyrrell, we talk about the competitive nature of the Kilkenny Championship now. Back then, I'm sure it was very much the same. You mentioned the difficult start. To climb the All-Ireland mountain, if you like, was a magnificent achievement. But I'm sure your first aim was just to get past Kilkenny.
Well, I always felt if you got out of the Kilkenny Championship, you had a great chance of winning a Leinster or an All-Ireland Club Championship. We were very good at that anyway. Some other clubs didn't achieve what we achieved. But we won the Club All-Ireland. We were the first ones to win it in 1976. So we had no fear of playing through a Leinster and an All-Ireland Championship. If we got out of Kilkenny, that is. The standard in Kilkenny is always high, as you know.
And Paddy Nari, that 76 victory, I suppose it built an ethos in the club, that winning ethos, that belief in yourself that you can go the whole way no matter what competition you enter.
Well, I tell you, we started off in after the county final. We went to Delvin in Westmeath and beat them. And look, at from there it snowballed. Everything just seemed to fall into place. The other thing was the final was played in Thurles, which is slightly different from now. Everything is played in Croke Park now. Yeah. The big thing about it at that time was it was on Patrick's Day. I don't know why they ever changed the club championship from Patrick's Day, because it was a brilliant day out for the club. whatever clubs were lucky enough to get into the final that time. So look, at we were lucky enough, we won two of them. We were very happy with that. And sure, when you look back on it, Brian Cody was the captain of the Kilkenny team at the time, and was the first city man to lift the McCarthy Cup. So that's one of the, well, it's one of our stalwarts as well.
Yeah. And you mentioned the snowball effect. How important was, you know, the whole campaign? And did you think big picture? Did you think All Ireland's when the campaign started, or when you won the Kilkenny Championship? How did you approach that season? Can you remember?
Well, I can guarantee you, when we won the county final that year, we were taken match by match. Now, you might say we had an easy one to start with, going up to Westmeath. But they brought us out into a pitch out in Westmeath, and the grass was about 6 inches high in it, I'd say. And we found it difficult enough to get, come to terms with it. But look, we got through it anyway. And from there, we were just playing sailing nearly. We got to the final against Mount Syne. Mount Syne had a star sort of team that time too, and we were lucky enough to come out the right side of it.
And Liam, talk to me about that special day, the All-Ireland final day, and Mount Syne. Obviously, the same technology wasn't there now, so you might have known too much about Mount Syne. And, you know, the whole atmosphere surrounding county final day on St Patrick's Day, it was a big, big day for any club player. What are your memories of it?
Sure, it was a fantastic day. I know one thing about Mount Syne, they had a village man playing centre forward for him who hurled with us the year before, with Terry Butler. He was in the Gardaí and he was transferred to Waterford the year before, and he was a fine hurler. And Jim Green, of course, was an all-star, played with Munster. They had a few fine hurlers. Mount Syne, they had a huge reputation. But Pat Ryan, yeah, they led us by 7 points in one stage in the second half, and it didn't look good. But I remember Fan coming up with the ball up the field and drove it up, and whatever way John McCormick got on the end of it, he twisted it into the net somewhere or another and went on to score 2 more goals. And we ended up winning by 5 points, which was a huge comeback, you know. But, you know, it was a great team effort, you know.
And 3-13 to 3-8 is how it finished on the day. Would it be fair for me to use the word, people talk about Real Madrid being the Galacticos. Was that village team Galacticos in the sense of you had Brian Cody, Joe Hennessy, Jimmy O'Brien, to name but a few? There was plenty of star hurlers, talented hurlers on that team. Liam Chunky O'Brien, of course. It was a really talented team, wasn't it, Liam?
It was a very talented team, and you mentioned the star players that were there, but we had players like Paddy Nary here who were also on the fringe of the county team, and Billy Walton, Dinny McCormack. Tom McCormack was also a member of that team, an All-Ireland medal winner, and Eamon Morrissey wasn't, was he? He was not on that team. Yeah. But yeah, look, it was a star-studded team, and you know, we still had to work hard to get where we did, and it was sheer grit and determination that won it out on that day. And as Liam has already said, I mean, only for John McCormack's 3 goals, we would have been in big trouble. But I do remember, as Liam already said there, Fan actually stirred up the team. He sort of woke us up with a long drive out of defence, and I can remember that well. With some relief, I can tell you, when you're standing on the goal and when you see something like that happening, you know, it does lift the spirits, and it did lift the team on the day. And you know, just a very good Mount Syne team just weren't able to respond at the end. They themselves will probably know and accept that they had a great chance. As Liam said, they went 7 points up, and you know, but you know, as I say, the power of the village team won out in the end, basically. Yeah.
Paddy, have you your own unique special memories from the day? You mentioned the fact that it was in Thurles in those days rather than Croke Park.
Well, I can tell you,
it was a cauldron, Thurles, wasn't it?
It was, surely. That's, yeah, and I can tell you one thing. I marked Jim Green myself the same day, and Mick Moore will stand by this. Towards the end of that game, Jim Green got a ball and he came solo and through with it. He struck it as hard as ever he could, it's, and it took the paint off the top of the crossbar. It's, now, Mick Moore might tell you that he had it covered, but I can guarantee you.
I did get a touch on it. Honest to God, I did get a touch on it. But I got away with it. They didn't even give him a 60 or 70 at the time.
Over the bar anyway, so lucky enough. But like I said, it could have just as easily snuck in under the bar. So that's how close it was. And you know yourself, in any of these finals, they're small margins.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was desperate to claim some credit for the victory in the end, you know, by getting that tip on the ball. But, yeah, look, at, I mean, as I say, as Paddy says, and we all say, we were up against a top-notch team, and I won't say we weren't lucky. We deserved to win. It was a great victory, and you know, to claim a second All Ireland title for the club. And from my own perspective, I mean, the trophy for the All Ireland is the Tommy Moore Memorial. He would have been my grand uncle, so it was that little bit of extra pleasure to pull off that trophy, you know, for a second time for the club.
It would have made it special. I won't hold you for too much longer because I know there's celebrating to be done, but Leap, on nights like tonight you remember, and you remember those occasions. As a general rule of thumb though, are you one to look back? Do you think back on games like that All-Ireland against Mount Sinai, or is the past in your view?
No. I always treasure past memories. I mean, I'm getting to an age now where there were special days for the club and for myself as well. I was very involved with the team as secretary of the club and selector at the time. I came up with that team, and they were a special team. That team won three championships inside 6 years and two club All-Irelands and got the five county finals. So, I mean, they were special players. And as Paddy said earlier, also in 82... we provided a captain of the Kilkenny team, a village man, Brian Cody, the first city man and the first village man to captain All-Ireland winning team. So 82 was a really special year for the Jem Stevens Club.
Yeah, Brian Cody, a legend in more ways than one. Paddy, final question.
When you're talking about remembering the past, we had two players on that team not with us anymore, Billy Walton and Shane and Andy Egan. Yeah. We'd just like to remember them tonight too. We're thinking about the families and that.
And obviously their contribution won't be forgotten in this club. And
That's true, yeah.
And just as a general point, finally, Paddy, as chairman, I suppose you look onwards in that role and, you know, to the past through your playing days as well as many other roles down through the years with the club. How important were successes like 82, 76 as well, in terms of building the whole mindset of the club? I'm sure in the lead up to last weekend's county final, you know, the whole pedigree was, if not mentioned in the dressing room, in the back of their mindset, we are the village, we are proud of who we are. How important are those successes in the framing of a club?
Well, look at, I'd say it again, that 82 team marks a milestone in the club. There were great progress made at that time, and I suppose that team could truly be identified as one of the foundation stones of our modern facilities within the club at the moment. And we have great facilities at the moment, which was built on the strength of those winning teams. And look, we're very thankful to them, and most of them are still involved in the club, which is a big deal as far as we're concerned, because a lot of players come through the club and you might never see them when they finish playing. But most of those teams, winning teams, they stuck with the club. We got officers of the club, we got lads who worked hard for the club and who brought us to where we are at the moment, and we have some of the finest facilities in the country.
A night with Jim Mulvan comes to the Larchfield Clubhouse on Saturday, December 2nd. Jim brought much success to the James Stevens football teams in the 90s and early 2000s. A great night is sure to be had, and one of the organisers, John Scott, previewed the event earlier.
Look, we've been kind of talking about it for the last few months there, and it was only over the last few weeks that we kind of started to throw it all together. And look, it's to kind of a reunion for all the football. We kind of had a run there of a lot of county finals there in the senior and intermediate, and Jim was the manager at the time, and I'm sure he was a great character in the club. Mm. You know, so just it'd be nice to appreciate what he did for the club as well in the football.
And sometimes football goes under the radar in Kilkenny, but it has produced some fine footballers down the line, and the village has a proud football history in its own right, and all that was led by Jim.
Oh, it was, yeah, it was. Jim kind of he kept the football very interested in the club for a long time, which is even in Kilkenny, which was actually hard to do. But I think everybody bought into it when Jim got involved in the village, and it was just everybody was actually buzzing to play the football for him. Like,
longevity, if we think of the village, is another trait, and Brian Cody synonymous with longevity with Kilkenny. Sometimes you think of football in Kilkenny, it might be a frustration for a lot of people, be it trying to grow the game or maybe get players to come along, but he stuck at it and he was with the club for a long period of time.
He was, yeah. I know he stuck at it for a good long time, and he actually went around nearly, because some of the hurlers, so the hurlers were probably some of the best footballers that we've had in even in Kilkenny, as a county. But the club, he just kept on, Jim just kept on asking fellas to play and give lads great opportunities to play and great memories as well in James Stevens as well with the football, you know.
And Mick Moore in the Kilkenny People this week has a lovely piece on Jim, and one of the points that stood out to me was the hurling pedigree that James Stevens has. But there was a time, say in the 1980s and 90s, where county championships were very bare. We went from 82 to 2004, and in that time, maybe when lads are getting a little bit frustrated with the hurling, at least they had the football to fall back on.
They have, it is, yeah. Now, and I would have been in that those areas as well when there was a barren spell for James Stevens. But yeah, and look, the interest was in, it kept everybody interested in the football, because we were winning a few of the football county finals, and it kept everybody involved as well, so it was brilliant.
You think of football as well, it keeps the year going, doesn't it? I mean, you take even today, we see our underage teams, they're going out and they're getting the Gaelic football training going after the hurling season. It's a great one to keep lads active.
Well, it does, yeah. It keeps everybody, and it keeps people busy as well during, well, coming up to the Christmas time, like, it keeps, especially when the hurling is over, rather than just the hurling over and you lose contact then until the following year. At least with the football, then kind of kicks in, and the underage is only kind of really starting now in the football, so, you know, it keeps them busy as well and keeps all the teams together coming up to the Christmas as well, so, which is great.
From your own perspective, John, were you able to enjoy the football a little bit more than the hurling, or did that competitive streak come out in you when playing the bit of Gaelic?
I know, the competitive streak would come out in you. But, no, look, you probably enjoyed the football a bit more. There probably wasn't as much pressure because of James Stevens with the hurling pedigree that they always had. There was always a little bit of pressure under for the hurling. But in the football, there was probably less pressure on it, and fellas could just go out and enjoy themselves and the whole lot. Like, they weren't under as much as some lads were just kind of taking it just to keep the fitness up, you know.
Just looking back on some of the matches, you see names like Owen Larkin and Philly Larkin. There can't be any coincidence there that they all turned out to be good footballers as well as good hurlers. That sporting pedigree is there no matter what you put your hand to.
Oh, yeah, no matter what sport, even the same thing, like for Peter Barry there as well, great footballer, and Brian McAvoy and Liam O'Connor, you know, just, they were all just great footballers. But the kind of the pressure was off as well when they went out onto the football pitch, and everybody enjoyed it, and they just gelled together as well. Like, and Jim was a major part of that as well, being with the coaching. And there was a photograph, I think it's actually in the Kilkenny People, that I think at one stage we only had two footballs.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just those things, those memories. You'd be going to train them with two footballs. Nowadays, you wouldn't, if you were to say you were playing with football with two footballs, there'd be lads laughing at you.
Yeah, and I see that picture here in front of me and the tagline, Mr. Football, and I think that sums them up really, really well. The success that has come James Stevens' way in the 2000s and, of course, back in 2011 as well, you can't separate the football and the hurling, and taking maybe the tactics and the sporting side of it out of it, the bond that must have been created there must have done teams an awful lot of good at all levels.
Oh, it does, yeah, sure. It does. It gets a great old spirit together as well, and a bit of camaraderie as well. And those things, like, people thrive on them when they're playing in a sport. Like, that's what it says, it's a team sport, really. And those days will never be, like, they'll last their lifetime. And people will always remember them. And especially when they go out on the field, then the lads that are still playing the hurling, those memories and those, they'll gel together, like, a lot better. We just all got on fierce well together. When we trained and stuff like that, especially in the football. Like, a lot of the time we'd be trained and we'd probably train for the hurling. We'd probably be training for an hour or so with the hurling, or an hour and a half. And then there'd always be 20 minutes of football nearly at the end of it. Until we were kind of, if we were knocked out of the hurling, it would be all football. But the hurling and the football kind of used to coincide with one another. You'd always get the last 20 minutes with football. And look, we just all gelled together, I think, and I have some great memories Some I can't repeat on the radio, but
fair enough.
we have some great memories of the football. No matter who we'd be playing, we had some great run-ins with the Rail Yard, and we had some great run-ins with Dixborough as well over the years. You know, and those things, I'll always remember them. You know,
when you're planning this, I'm sure the memories come flowing back.
They do, yeah, and we have we set up a kind of a link that you can actually leave your messages for Jim for the night, like, as well. And some of them now are absolutely brilliant, you know. So it's absolutely brilliant now. And you see some of the lads putting in the messages, and you read back and what their outlook was and what they remember, and the stuff you wouldn't remember yourself sometimes, like. But it's amazing to see all the little stories coming in. Believe it or not, we have a meeting now tonight about it, like, but we're trying to finalise a few things. But look, it's not just all for the football either. Like, there's a junior 2000 reunion there as well, and there's an under 21 2000 as well having a reunion that night. And there is an actual Camogie, the one the junior that year as well, in 2002, the one the junior Camogie, and they're having a reunion. So the club will be fairly packed on December the 2nd, they're looking at it. But it will be, we're trying to finalise the small details and have it somewhere kind of organised anyway.
Very good, John, and it's great to see all those different teams recognised, and especially as the years go by, it becomes even more important to mark those occasions, because, you know, we all remember senior county finals, particularly in hurling, but those achievements are milestones for those players and their families.
Oh yeah, like, especially in, I was involved with the junior and the under 21. I was actually hurling still. I think this was probably one of my last games that I hurled with the junior. But and I was a selector on the under 21. So it's great. Like, those teams as well, when you look back at the faces, and like, Sir Owen and Jackie were on the under 21 team, and they were actually on the junior team before they actually started out in their senior career. Like, so it's great for them as well for that milestone as well to be recognised, you know.
That concludes this week's episode of the James Stevens Podcast. Don't forget to like and share wherever you do your podcast listening. And until next time, from Niamh Kelly York, look after yourselves, look after each other, and we'll talk to you next week.